So good evening all, it's Devara Krasniansky from Adayad. And tonight I'm really excited to be working once again with Shalom Task Force. I really appreciate and value our collaboration with Shalom Task Force. And tonight we'll have Yeshaya Krauss talking about Please Change, How to Ask for Change. But before we get into that, Yeshaya, can you talk a little bit to what Shalom Task Force is for the community?
Sure. So, hi. First of all, good evening. It's an honor to be here. So, I'm a psychotherapist, and I work in the education department for Shalom Task Force. One of the things that most people think of when they hear the name Shalom Task Force is those ads that everybody sees in the paper, that you are not alone, things like that. The Shalom Task Force as an agency has been around for about, I believe, 27 years, and the primary mission of this agency is to support victims of domestic abuse in the Orthodox Jewish community. To that end, we have the hotline, which is some place where people can call in, talk about their concerns with their relationships in an anonymous fashion. And get somebody to hear them out, help themselves to understand the story, get some information about what resources may be available to them, and hopefully to help themselves in a better place. The education department, what that does is we go around to different community venues, whether it's shuls, schools, Beis Medrash, college campuses, all the different places, and we talk about issues surrounding healthy relationships, whether it's talking about what an unhealthy relationship looks like, talking about what a healthy relationship looks like, presenting specific skills, which is what we're going to touch on a little bit tonight, hopefully, to help people to support their own marriages, their own relationships. It's very important work, and I'm glad to be a part of it. I'd also like to extend my thanks to Adayad and to Devora for inviting us to join on this particular event. The work that you do on supporting healthy marriages and Shalom Bayis is really just amazing and so necessary, and I'm really honored to be a part of it.
And that's why we invite you, because I feel like the education department is really what we focus on, but unfortunately there are some situations that need the other part of what Shalom Task Force does, and I'm glad that we have such a good collaboration that I send people to Shalom Task Force, and the anonymity and is very powerful, and the advice is always right on target. So I'm really grateful that Shalom Task Force exists.
Yeah.
And now for our topic of the night.
Okay. So let's get down to business then, shall we? So the title of tonight's presentation is asking for the idea of asking for what you want and for what you need in marriage. It's a very big topic, it really is. We're gonna cover a lot of ground, both on an internal level about what goes on inside the person when they have a particular need that they want to express, and also on an interpersonal level. We're gonna talk a little bit about both conceptually, and then we can talk about hopefully some practical applications. And then we get to my favorite part, which is hopefully the questions and answers that will come towards the end. That's always my favorite part of these things. So first thing to know, this is clearly without question, is that there are no magic wands. There are no magic wands at all. There are ideas about effective communication, about what to say, how to say it, what not to say. But at the end of the day, we're talking about two distinct individuals, each one with their own ideas and mindset, and each has their own feelings, everyone has their own biases. And although all of these skills can help cut through that, all these things that we're gonna talk about tonight can kind of help cut through that, hopefully, if they're done properly. At the end of the day, the answer to a request for a change might be a simple no. It might be a complicated no. It might be a verbal yes and a practical no. There are many possibilities. And when the answer comes out as you not getting what you want or need, it may be important to think about your own reaction. The question to ask yourself, what will I do if I don't get what I want? How will that affect me? And that's an important question to answer yourself and to really understand. There's obviously a whole slew of different kinds of needs. Some are much more pressing than others. You can ask for something, you can not get it, and be okay knowing that you were heard and not dismissed. And that experience by itself can really create a connection. You know, when you're asking for something and your spouse responds in a way which, even though they're saying, I can't get that for you, I can't do this for you, but they're acting in a way which is validating, and they're acting in a way which makes you feel like a person and appreciated as a person, that can really, even though you're not getting what you want, it can really create a closer connection. The same thing can happen, and this can happen even if the need itself is not a small need, even if it's a more pressing need. If you're feeling heard and you're feeling validated, then that can really be a great experience. So the question really is, how do you react to that no? It's a deeply personal question, one which you can't really answer with generalizations. For situations like that, it's best to have a trusted person to speak things out with and determine exactly what you're gonna do. I don't have this thing that I really need, and my spouse is not working with me on it. Sometimes you have to be able to speak with a third party. Like, for example, just as something that would really benefit for speaking to a third party, one question that was submitted before this event was how to get your spouse to stop viewing inappropriate material online. And that's a very loaded question. There's so many different moving parts to it that it's best really to discuss that with somebody who's either a professional or knows these things very well. Asking for that in a relationship, or something pressing at least, not specifically in those terms, is something that we're gonna cover in terms of technique, but dealing with the issue itself is really something that it's beyond the discussion that we're gonna have here. And when we get to these deeper meanings, very often there are things that come out that do need to be addressed with a third party, a therapist, some professional or another. So that's one thing to think about, that there are no magic wands. So when we're talking about needs, it's important to really think about where needs come from. And that may sound kind of like a silly thing to consider. I mean, needs are needs, right? There's something, I need something, and that's it. Truthfully though, when we have a practical need, they do need to be understood, because knowing where they come from changes not just the way you understand what it is practically that you need, but also the way you express it and the way it lands. Why is this something that you need in particular? So let's define needs a little bit more deeply. Generally speaking, the needs we're talking about are things that contribute to the person's sense of security, safety, and trust in the relationship. You have one spouse that makes the realization that I need something from you. What they're really saying is, I feel that this item, this particular piece is something which is important for my feeling secure in this relationship. And this definition holds true most of the time. It might not be a conscious thought connecting the tangible need to their need for safety, but that's essentially what a need is. I need this on some level in order to make myself feel more safe or feel less unsafe in the relationship. And how secure that need will make them feel, it's gonna depend very on how important the need is, how it can impact the relationship by its presence or absence, depending on the specifics. Let's look at an example. Like, you have one anecdote. Yankee walks into the kitchen, the dishes aren't done again, and he gets upset about it because he isn't sure how to say anything about it without it coming across as an accusation. So he's feeling upset and he wants to say something. He doesn't want to feel accusatory. He's just not sure what to do about it. He knows that his wife has been having a hard time, and at the same time, so is he. He values cleanliness. He feels things are off when they're not clean. It's just what he's used to. It's just what the standard he grew up with. And even after 10, 15 years of marriage, it sticks. That's his standard. That's what he needs in order to feel calm, in order to feel secure in the relationship. His wife, on the other hand, did not grow up with that standard. Her family's kind of more free form. Dishes can stay there for a while. It's okay. She knows that his parents are neater than hers were, and than she is. And she's constantly feeling criticized, even though it's totally not what Yanka needs to do. He has this need, and he's not really sure how to talk about it. So within this anecdote itself, we see this idea, he needs something to be neat, and there's an emotional feeling of kind of stability. I feel things are stable when I see things are neat. At the same time, because this has been going on for a while, he's kind of almost given up on talking about it because he's not sure how to approach it in a way which will be effective. Let's talk about another example. We have another husband. This is a little bit more stereotypical possibly. So just bear with me. Chaim has always displayed a complete lack of interest in his health. He's overweight. He's not interested in visiting the doctor, has not gone to the dentist in a while. And even though there are no present medical issues, his wife, Shady, really wants him to take care of himself. This is a need for her. She's frustrated because every time she brings it up, he rolls his eyes, makes a joke, gets annoyed, and she's really upset. But underneath that upset is real concern about her husband's health. He's not taking care of himself. Even if there aren't any issues right now, something could happen, and she's scared. She feels that her concern isn't important enough to him for him to react in the way that she would like. So we see that there's a concrete need in both of these situations, and underlying those concrete needs is an emotional factor which makes that need more important. And we could really go on and on. I'm sure everybody who's on this presentation could bring in all sorts of interesting things that have come up, that there's a practical need, there's something that you need done, and then underlying there's an emotion. That's the common factor, that you have this emotional foundation to this concrete need. And if you do a quick web search, you'll see that conflict is a fact of life. The definition of conflict, I think, is I have a need that's not being met, I'm having an emotional reaction to it, and that emotional reaction is being directed towards you. Conflict just happens. The question is really how to deal with the need before it turns into an actual conflict. So when we think about this stuff, there seem to be two different ways that people tend to express their needs, with a lot of gray areas in between. One side, you'll have people who acknowledge themselves that they need something, bring it up in a respectful and non-antagonistic way, have a productive discussion, and everybody goes home happy. Sometimes this is going to end up resulting in some kind of a satisfactory compromise. Sometimes, hopefully. At the very least, the needing spouse, as we said before, feels heard and accepted. Even if the need itself isn't met in a way that fully satisfies it, you've kind of bridged the gap, the relationship is a little stronger, everyone comes out the better off. And then you have the other extreme, in which someone sits with the feeling of discomfort until the need becomes so pressing, either it'll just completely blow out, it totally explodes in an outpouring of emotion, or it implodes and dies. Like we saw before with the dishes guy, like he's kind of given up on this. This is a piece that's just important to him that he can't really bring out because he just doesn't know how to say it. And it kind of takes a small piece of him with it. This is a piece of himself that is not full because he can't have that need and that need met. By explosion, you don't have a respectful discussion. There's no planning in terms of how you're going to say what you want, what you want, what you're going to say, how. There's definitely no feeling of closeness coming after an emotional explosion. Even if there's a chance of getting the concrete result you want, it's at the expense of distance and feelings of resentment over the extended period of time leading up to the explosion. Because let's say you're going for a day or two with that need pressing on you, then you're going to start feeling resentment towards your spouse because they're not meeting the need that you have. So even if they end up meeting the need eventually, it's a short-term fix. Eventually, there's going to be another need that pops up, possibly even the same one, then the cycle just starts all over again. Distance, friction, and even more likelihood that you're not going to go with the first option, which seemed on paper at least a much simpler and easier option. You have to really think about how that's going to work. So the trick, presumably, is learning how to lean closer to the first choice of reasonable discussion than the second. The way we described it, it seems like the first step to being able to do that is by acknowledging to ourselves that we have a need which is not being met, which may sound kind of silly. I mean, I should know that I have unmet needs. Truthfully, though, unless you're going to figure out a way to address the need or make a conscious and rational decision that it's really not important, you're not acknowledging the need with the full importance that it actually deserves. Not acknowledging it is a direct lead-in to the explosive option. You're pushing it down, you're pushing it aside. You're saying, I can't bring that up because A, B, and C, whatever your concerns are that are holding you back from addressing this need of yours directly. The need doesn't go anywhere. So the emotional energy that's surrounding you just builds, it's anger, resentment, sadness, and then boom, there you go. So the first step is internal. You have to look at the need and you have to figure out why it's important to you, which we're going to get to in a minute. And then you have to make a decision on exactly what you're going to do. I mean, there are people who can say, okay, you know, honestly, this is just not something that's important. And I'm making up my mind to just put it out of my head. And that sometimes works if you're really being honest about it. If you're not being honest about it and you're just shoving it down, you're just leading yourself to explosion. So the idea of understanding where the need comes from, which we mentioned before, the emotional foundation, you need to understand why you need this. There's definitely a reason for it. This is a story that happened, a couple that I was once seeing. You have the husband was an expert at making decisions without his wife's input. And there was one in particular, he gave money to a friend who had a history of just needing a lot of money and making very bad financial decisions with that money. The wife found out about this and she was understandably very upset. And the husband didn't get it. It's like, I don't get this. Why are you so upset? We have the money. It's not like we're gonna miss it. And why would it bother you? And the answer that she gave him was, I know that we have enough money. The money is not the issue. I couldn't care less about that. The reason I'm upset is because you didn't discuss it with me first. She needed to feel valued. She needed to feel respected. And the concrete translation of that need was, I need you to consult with me before you make any big financial decisions like that. It's very likely that if the husband had made a conscious effort to make his wife feel valued and respected in other ways, this particular incident might not have been so intense. But it's not something that he was aware of. This need of his wife, this emotional need of his wife, wasn't something that he was aware of. He couldn't cater to it because he wasn't aware of it. And the emotional explosion, so to speak, came through over here. So where we stand now is that you've acknowledged your need, you know where it comes from, and now you've got to get that need out. So here's where we get more into the practical technique. People have a very hard time sharing what they need with people who they're closest to. And it's interesting, like if I'm super close with my wife, rationally thinking, she should be the one I feel the most comfortable discussing these things with. There are a bunch of different answers to why that's true, that we feel afraid of opening up like that, depending on the circumstances. But what they boil down to is usually a combination of two things. Either there's fear of vulnerability. I'm admitting that I have a need. I'm acknowledging that I can't do this for myself and I need you to do it for me. And then the other thing is fear of disappointment. Okay, there we go. I've made myself vulnerable, which I don't have a problem with, but I don't believe that you're gonna do it. I don't believe that you're gonna actually meet my need where I have it. The first thing is what stops people from opening up to begin with. It also stops them from expressing appreciation. It's the same idea. I can't express appreciation because, again, my appreciating something shows that there are things that I can't do for myself. I can't do for me what you did for me. And I appreciate that you stepped up for that. People have a hard time with appreciation for that reason. It also stops people from accepting criticism. The second, fear of disappointment, is what brings someone to sideline their own needs, sit with resentment and pain, and not take risks because I don't want to be disappointed. I don't want to have to be rejected by you not being able to meet me where I need you to be. Some of it may have to do with your history, with your spouse or from before you got married. It could be that you've learned that people don't react the way you'd like them to, specifically your spouse, other family members, other people in your life. You're unwilling to try it again. Some of it may have more to do with you personally. Maybe you tend to shy away from confrontation, and this is something that you consider to be a confrontation. Maybe you consider your well-being to be less important than keeping the peace. That's a very common one. People say, if I bring this up, this is a touchy subject, I don't want to bring it up and rock the boat. Rocking the boat is, it's important sometimes. And boats rock when they're out at sea, even when the water's calm. Boats rock. It's the nature of a boat and it's the nature of relationships. Some people have that thought of trying to keep the peace at the expense of their own needs. And it's worth thinking about what puts you in that mindset and trying to address it for both your sake and for the sake of your relationship. So when you're trying to communicate a need, you're operating with a set of unknowns. You don't know exactly how your spouse is going to work. You may have some idea based on what they've done in the past, but sometimes that thought is going to hold you back. The thought of hopelessness isn't a decision to put the need on the side. As we said, a person theoretically can do. It's coming from an emotional place of sadness and pain. That's really where hopelessness comes from. That's where the decision to not bring it up for fear of rejection comes from. The need's still there. This is something that matters to you, and even if you've thought it through, the energy is still there, the emotional energy is still building up, and it'll affect how your message comes out, and if it's oppressing you, it'll come out eventually. I would just ask everybody, if somebody accidentally unmuted themselves, if they could just make sure that they remute themselves. It would be very helpful. Thank you. There are a few ideas that can make this whole process easier. So let's go through some of this. First and foremost is forget all the complicated stuff. Forget about all that. Sometimes a spouse may just be royally spaced out about certain things, seriously, and more than happy to help out or do something differently if you say directly, this is important to me. You know, obviously everyone here knows their spouses better than I do, but take a chance with it. Pick something minor that you think, like, oh, they're never going to do this for me. Pick something minor and say directly, it would be so great if you did A, B, and C. I'll tell you a story. You have one husband, again, maybe possibly stereotypically so, who is terrible at buying presents, absolutely terrible. And after a few years of this going on, the wife approaches the husband and says to him, I would love it if you would take me to a jewelry store for my birthday. Okay, he said, and that was it. And they went to a jewelry store, she got a necklace, and everything was great. That's really possibly the place to start off. It doesn't have to be complicated with techniques and tricks and how to say and what to say. Just say it straight. If you feel that there's a possibility, even, it's worth it. What's the worst that could happen? Saying something like, let's say, here's another question that came in. Someone felt that their spouse was not presenting themselves in a way which was put together. Say something like, you look so nice in new clothes, or you look so nice when you're put together. So that can send the message that you like the way they look in certain circumstances, and that you would appreciate it if they would get themselves put together. It's not antagonistic. It's not confrontational. Stating the fact, you look so nice when you have new clothes. And that's it. So sometimes a direct approach is really the best. One thing to understand if you decide that you can't use the direct approach is that your spouse is not a mind reader. And a lot of the things that we're going to cover here are actually part of what we discuss in the Shalom Workshop, which is Shalom Task Force's marriage seminar. A lot of talk about communication skills. So a lot of the things that we're going to touch on tonight come from that. Your spouse is not a mind reader. Your spouse is not going to just automatically know what you need by you feeling it. They might be able to guess little bits and pieces. They might be able to approximate what they think you need, but there's really no substitute at all for you actually laying it out clearly. You're saying, this is what I need. Can you help me with this? They may end up not giving you what you need. They may give you something you don't want. This is if you don't lay it out. And they might have the best of intentions. Like, let's say this person who wanted, this woman who wanted a necklace and wanted to go to the jewelry store. Let's say she had just kind of let it sit there, and the husband, by some chance, bought her a present of a new spatula. It's very nice, and I appreciate that you're getting me something that you realize that it's my birthday, but that's not what I need for me to feel like you're appreciating me, that you're recognizing my birthday. So speak it out. It's very common that people build up this resentment and distance in their relationships because they keep expecting their spouse to know what they need and they haven't gotten it yet. And then it becomes not just the need, there's also the resentment, and things kind of spiral out of control because you have the need and then there's resentment. The resentment feeds off of other things that you're kind of looking at that are not perfect, and things tend to go downhill from there unless you address it. Many people are conditioned from the time that they're very young to feel that asking for someone else to do something for you is selfish, and they have a very hard time asking for things. Even if they know that it's a simple thing, they're likely going to get it. It's something you need to be willing to get used to and you need to be comfortable with. Aside from the feelings of guilt regarding being selfish or self-centered, there can also be reluctance based on fear of a reaction, like we mentioned before. And if you have a relationship which is based at least on wanting to do right by each other, your spouse will probably appreciate knowing what you want, providing that it's done well. You know, storming up somebody saying, you never buy me jewelry, is obviously not the way to go. But saying, I would love that for that to happen, that's a pretty solid way to express it. You're expressing yourself clearly is going to help your spouse do their job as a spouse, and which will make them feel better. So telling your spouse what you want in the right way, it's not being selfish, it's you helping them feel better about the relationship And that also cycles. That also turns into a whole thing that you can grow connection in your relationship like that. So that's first thing. Your spouse is not a mind reader. Neither are you, for that matter. You have to, once you've decided that you're going to discuss whatever the issue is, know exactly what you want to get out of the conversation. Know what your goal is. Do you want to solve a problem? Do you want to let the other person know what you're going through without solving a problem? Both of those are options. Sometimes it happens that you realize that your sole goal in having a conversation is to pick a fight. It happens. People are angry, and sometimes they feel like, okay, I'm going to pick a fight and then I'll feel better. You won't feel better about it. It's probably worth stopping there once you come to that realization, probably. The effectiveness of your conversation is really going to depend on what you want to do. So it's worth telling your spouse what you want to do. It's worth it. They're not mind readers, again. They may think you're trying to solve a problem when you're really not. They may think you're trying to share something when you do want to solve a problem. And if you're not upfront with what you want from the conversation, you run the risk of having the wrong conversation. You run the risk of having a conversation that you didn't start out trying to have, which ends up with more unmet needs, more resentment, and you add on to that that you're now upset at yourself for not taking care of yourself properly. So think it through. Know what you want to address. You may want to actually tell your spouse, this is what I want to talk about. I don't want to put you on the spot. So can we make up a time together to discuss this particular thing? Or for me to talk about this particular thing, again, depending on what your goal is. You don't want to put them on the spot, because that sometimes, depending on the issue, can help them feel like they're being confronted, which makes them feel kind of defensive. And a defensive place is not a good place to have a productive conversation from. You want to be specific. The more specific you are about the focus and topic of the conversation, the less likely it is that you'll get sidetracked and pulled into a whole stream of generalization. You know, if you're specific about what you're saying, then you're not going to get pulled into this whole stream of other reasons why you're resentful and other reasons why you don't take care of me or you don't do whatever it is that you need to do, that you wanted to do. Like going back to Chaim and Shandy from before, there's the guy who never went to the doctor. If Shandy decides to just start talking about how Chaim doesn't take her seriously without focusing on one particular change he can make, the conversation is not going anywhere productive. He's not going to take care of his health, and he's just going to feel attacked. If you focus on the health thing, it's important for me that you take care of yourself. That's a whole different story. That's a completely different story, because then the conversation is about your specific need, not about the feelings that you have because they're not filling that need, which are usually pretty not fun. Keep the focus on your own experience. Like when you're starting off, you want to use what's called an I statement. If you're saying, so let's go back to that couple. I feel very worried about your health is a much more connecting, it's a much more peaceful way of talking than walking up to somebody and saying, you never go to a doctor. It's accusatory, it's confrontational. You want to focus particularly on your need, which is to have that emotional need filled. I'm worried about your health. And then talk about practical suggestions. You're doing something wrong. That kind of phraseology is much less likely to be productive than I feel bad because I see you doing something specific. And you can fill in the blanks however you want to, and then make sure you put in, can we change this? If you don't put in the can we change this, if you don't suggest a specific behavior, then it's just a complaint. You want to, the idea is that you want to replace something instead of just telling them stop doing this. You don't want to repeal. You want to replace. Asking for an explanation of why. This is something that I learned from one of my professors when I was in school. And it rings true so strongly. If you say, why did you do that? You're automatically putting the other person on the defensive. A better way to ask that or to accomplish that, if you're really interested in what their justification for their action was, is what made you decide to do that? Why did you do that? For some reason comes out as very antagonistic, and it's something to avoid at all costs unless you really want the answer of why did you do that? When you're discussing what you want, as we said before, keep in mind that your spouse might not want to give you what they're asking for. you voicing your need is an opening, it's an invitation to make sure that the needs of both sides are being met as much as possible. So it's been said that the definition of a healthy relationship is both sides being able to say, I will put into the relationship to the best of my abilities in a way that helps you feel safe, secure, cherished, and loved. I will do this in a way which does not compromise my ability to feel the same way. So at the same time that you're asking for your own needs to be filled, at the same time, you want to make sure that you're not stepping on their ability to fulfill, to have you fulfill their needs and vice versa. So you want to be very clear that both of you are feeling safe. It needs to be a discussion, sometimes more than others, depending on the intensity of the issue. And you need to be open to accepting how they can help you. It could be a negotiation. It needs to be talked about. And it might not be exactly what you're asking for. But as we said before, having the conversation itself can bring to a feeling of closeness as long as you're both accepting of each other, you're both validating of each other, you're both trying to understand each other's position. Even if you're not getting exactly what you want, that could be very helpful. Let's say you've had the conversation, you've been able to say what you want, your spouse has been receptive, they're making an effort. It's important to be patient. Success is not necessarily going to happen overnight. It's very unlikely that it will. One thing I tell my clients is like you've built up this behavioral pattern for years. You're not taking this down in one 45-minute session. And the same with this. People generally have these behavioral patterns that they've had for years and years, decades sometimes. And one conversation is not going to just change everything overnight. It's not going to happen. At the same time, keep in mind that if they're working on whatever you've asked for, they're obviously working towards whatever compromise you've met, you've come to together. It's important to show them that you appreciate it. They're doing it for you. They're trying to meet this need for you. They're trying to bring about this change to meet what you have told them is a need of yours. Yeah, it's important to show appreciation. If you're actually seeing how they're making progress or how they're working on it, even if they're not actually making any serious progress, but you see that they're working on it, that alone, similar to having a conversation, you see that they're working on something which is important to you, that can also help you to create closeness together. And the need itself may become less important because you see them trying to fill it. So this is something that people have a lot of trouble with sometimes. Showing appreciation, as we said before, is vulnerability. You're saying, I can't do this for myself. And one of the things that people ask very often is, how can I show appreciation for someone else? How can I show my gratitude for you doing what I need you to do? And it's a great question. And the best way is to be direct about it. I see you doing this. Thank you for working so hard on something which is important to me. That's the best way, hands down, no questions. If you can't do that, let's say you can't bring yourself to express your thanks verbally for whatever reason, feel too uncomfortable, or you feel that your spouse might be too uncomfortable about it. Maybe they're not so good at accepting compliments. That's a great one. So write a note. Sticky notes are great for this stuff, by the way. Sticky notes are great. Write a thank you note. Write a little thank you note, a little personal thing, expressing your appreciation in writing. It's much easier to express in writing. It really is. And there's something about the way the brain works that when you're writing, words come out differently than they would when you're talking. It's just the way it goes. Try it out. Here's another good thing to do. Think of a way to address a need of theirs that you know about and maybe you haven't been paying so much attention to. If you're not sure what need they would want you to step up on, say it. I've noticed you're really trying and I want to try to do something for you. It's not, you may think it's like, oh, it's trite. It's like, you know, I'm just giving them back because they're giving to me. It's not. You're creating connection by doing that. You're saying, you are important to me, and I see that you're really working on this, and I want to help make it easier by bridging whatever gap there may be between us. And you working on their need will make it easier for them to work on your need. It will. Fact. And again, the best way to do it really is by doing it verbally. If you think about it, the single most important reason why people don't follow through on commitments to change is because they start to feel it doesn't matter. Like if anybody's ever started an exercise program or a diet, the thought that pops into people's head eventually after they get, after they've gone for a little bit, is it doesn't matter, and nobody, it's not going to make a difference, it's not going to change. If you show your appreciation, that will make it so much easier for them to follow through. So you're doing it for yourself, yeah, but you're doing it for the other person also. You have to have feedback. So this is all great when what you're asking for is a behavior, right? Practical behaviors. This is important to me. I feel this, therefore could we this? Great, great stuff. What if your need is an emotional one? And this is a much touchier thing, much more delicate. What if you're asking for an emotional need? What if you're asking for something to do with your relationship, the way your relationship runs? You want to feel appreciated, and your spouse doesn't show that appreciation. You want to feel loved, and you're not feeling that. You want to feel cared for. And that's, quite honestly, that's one of the loneliest places that a person can be. If they're married and they love their spouse, they care about their spouse, and they're just not getting anything back. They're not feeling cared for themselves. You want to feel more connected, and this is very common. Unfortunately, it's very common for there to be a big gap in terms of how the relationship is perceived. One spouse may think everything's great, the other not so much. So in cases such as these, the spouse that wants a change can turn that need into something concrete. For example, let's say a man feels unhappy with the level of emotional connection, and this does happen. That men feel unhappy with the level of emotional connection. They feel like they're just disconnected and distant. And his wife seems to feel that everything is fine. He can think about what action might make him feel more connected. And then you start there. I'm feeling like we were a little distant. So can we go out on a date? Can we go out on a date? Could we have tea together? Could we schmooze? Could we watch a movie together if that's your hashkafa? Whatever it is. The idea of changing, looking at the emotional need and seeing, practically speaking, how can I have my spouse address that? That can help get your spouse on board. Another thing to consider with emotional needs is that very often it goes both ways. If one of them feels disconnected, then the other is probably also going to feel that. And yeah, very often there is a gap. But very often also, if one feels disconnected, the other one is also going to feel very disconnected, even if they're not going to admit it. More likely, it's deep down that the less expressive person has resigned themselves to not having that kind of connection because it hasn't happened. And they're unwilling to risk bringing it up for fear of rocking the boat, which in this case might be necessary and very productive. Looking for the other's underlying needs and trying to meet them can break the way this cycle goes. It's because up until here, it really is a cycle. I feel unvalued, so I'm not saying anything. You feel like I'm not bringing anything up. So it just ends up continuing in this whole cycle of us becoming more and more distant. If I actively look for a need that I can meet of yours, that breaks the cycle. It changes the dynamic between the two of us. Once it changes the dynamic, that may give them space. That may give them the idea of, oh, let me come back to the other person. Let me come back to my spouse by meeting their needs. Again, this is not a magic wand because, as we said, there are no magic wands. It takes work. It can take a lot of work, especially in very distant cases where you have both spouses who are kind of shut down and turned off from each other because they both feel that there's no way to really repair that cycle. But it is still a possibility that looking for the needs of the other person can help you to repair it very well. Long-standing cycles like this are very often the toughest to work on and may well have been there, as we said, before you two even met. So in cases like these, where you have these long-standing cycles, this is where a professional can be very helpful. I want to point out that in situations where one spouse is controlling or abusive, talking about your needs may not be a possibility and, quite honestly, may not even be safe. So in situations like that, that's what Shalom Task Force's anonymous phone and text hotline is. That's what it's there for. We just recently started this text line. It's been very successful. We've had a lot of people texting in with their questions about relationships, just sharing their concerns, getting some guidance, finding resources for themselves. And the hotline offers a place for people to get that kind of support and validation and to start working towards next steps. The hotline can answer questions about abusive relationships, but not just about those, but also about regular questions, about regular relationships, dating questions that people may have. So definitely feel free to call, text, or WhatsApp to that number if you feel that these are things that you would like to address anonymously. I'm going to actually put the number in the chat right now, so whoever has need of it can make use of it.
We'll also share it on the web, on our website.
Oh, thank you. So in conclusion, I mean, as we said, the more personal an issue is, the harder it is to talk about. Everything in a relationship is personal, which makes it even harder to talk about. Because this is the most important relationship that you have. And very often this is where people get their sense of self-esteem from, their sense of effectiveness as a person from, is from their relationships. This is, bonding is the one human need that we cannot accomplish by ourselves. We can drink by ourselves, we can eat by ourselves, we can build our own houses. Can't bond with ourselves, it doesn't work. And healthy relationships are really built on being able to trust enough to take the risk to make yourself vulnerable and allow your spouse to respond properly. So if we can take these small steps, allow ourselves to take those risks, even sometimes push ourselves to take those risks, because I mean, it's called a risk. It's not comfortable. It's not fun. There are touchy subjects in marriage. There really are. But by allowing yourself to take the risks and trusting your spouse in a way that's obviously healthy and proper, then you can build relationships that can be a source of lifelong support and growth for both spouses.
Thank you. Okay, a lot there. Some questions came in, and if anyone has any other questions in the next few minutes, you can just put it in the chat or you can send it to the anonymous form that on Adayad. Okay, so Shaya, can I ask you a question?
Sure. On behalf
of someone? Okay.
Go for it.
So this person, can't tell the gender, says that they don't feel worthy, and that's why they don't ask. Can you talk to that for a minute?
That is a tough one. That is a very tough one. Feeling worthy. So I would say that feeling worthy is, before you're even talking about relationships, I mean, that's a lot of internal work. One of the things to really consider, and this is in general, without knowing the specifics of the situation, obviously, but in general, is to think about, well, what makes you feel unworthy? Is it something that's going on inside your own head? Is it thoughts that you have about yourself? Is it experiences that you've had in the past that may be unrelated to your current relationship? You know, it's not uncommon that when people have a not so great relationship with parents, or have experienced bullying as kids, they have issues. They have issues moving forward as they get older that they just don't feel that they're worthy of love, of caring. They don't feel that they're worthy of anything. They sometimes come through as just underachieving, or whether in life in general or in relationships, because they just don't believe that they're capable or worthy of being loved. So that's really the first question that somebody would ask. Now the question is, so is it something that your spouse is actually doing that's making you feel unworthy? If that's what's going on, then that in itself becomes a need. You need to feel worthy, you need to feel loved, you need to feel appreciated. If it's something that you can safely address with your spouse, go for it. If it's not something that you feel comfortable addressing with your spouse, bring in a third party, like say a Rav, say a therapist, or even a close family friend, if you feel safe doing that, that can be very helpful. That's what I would say to that question.
Yeah, it's too much to do on your own.
It really is. It really is.
Okay, another question. We actually got a few questions in the same realm of halacha and hashkafa. One wants the other one to be more from, which I guess it can really go both ways. Can you talk to that for us 1 minute? Because that's a big loaded question also.
That's a very loaded question. So I'll tell you what my understanding is. This is, you know, I'm putting aside my therapist hat and just talking from my Masora, from my Rebbein, is that your wife is not your Mashkiach and you are not her Mashkiach. So the question, now putting the therapist hat back on, why? Why do you, what makes you feel that you need your husband or your wife to be more or less from? It's a valid question. What's the need there? And how can, and you also have to keep in mind that spirituality and the way you connect with Hashem, the way you connect with religion, is a major part of people's lives. And if you're asking your spouse to change that, you're theoretically, you're asking them to really change a very big part of how they live their life. And it's a big question. And it's something that has to be approached very delicately and with tremendous respect for each other as people. I'm going to stop there before I get myself.
That's a short answer. I think maybe we'll see if we can come up with a talk on just that topic, because it's, I get that almost every call in some form or another.
It's a very tough question. Very tough question.
And it's happening a lot.
It is.
Okay. Another question that came in is that for years I kind of let him think that it was okay, but it was bothering me for a long time. If I bring it up, I'll kind of be looking like a liar myself, or making him feel bad that he went along with it for so long. Can you talk to that?
So bring something up if it's been going on for a while. So I'm gonna address that in two parts. Part number one is, let's say the spouse has been doing something thinking that you wanted them to do it, and you really didn't, and you just kind of let them go along with it. It's like I think the first thing to acknowledge is my spouse meant well in that situation. My spouse meant well. My spouse was doing what they did out of the goodness of their heart and with the best of intentions. And to really connect with that idea, I am important enough to my husband, to my wife, that they have been doing this consistently because they thought it's what I wanted. So connect with that feeling. I'm important to them. Next, now you need to get them to cut it out, which is a whole different story. But connecting with that feeling. And then, like, say, listen, I really, and voice that appreciation, that I really appreciate that you've been doing A, B, and C all this time. I felt embarrassed, and again, making yourself vulnerable. I feel embarrassed to tell you that it's not really something that I enjoy. I appreciate it so much that you've been doing it. It's just not something that I really enjoy. So coming at it from both angles, voicing the appreciation, reinforcing the appreciation. And then after that, voicing the need that you have. Like, okay, enough. I don't really like eggplant parmesan that much. You know, something along those lines. If it's something that they haven't been doing that you want them to do, and they know that they're not doing it, and you kind of let it slide, it's actually kind of simpler. Because in that situation, you can just say, this is something I would really appreciate if you do. Is it possible that you could do it for me? Just to say it straight out, it becomes just a need. And even if it's kind of been the elephant in the room that, you know, I don't do this and you're okay with it, it's never too late to voice that this is something that I would really appreciate. If it's voiced from a standpoint of appreciation and gratitude, then it's unlikely to go wrong. You may feel a little silly about it, but it's unlikely to go wrong, and you know, you gotta weigh the pros and cons. This is something that I want. I don't want to feel silly. Which one is more important?
Like the short-term discomfort or the long-term discomfort? Get over the short-term for the long-term.
Exactly.
You mentioned a lot about I have to be vulnerable or take the risk. How can someone build that vulnerability? Or because if they don't currently work that way, then what can they do to get there?
So I think let's go back to even before marriage, really. because I think the way dating works is really a very good example of how to do that. You know, meeting somebody for the first time, assuming that they've been set up by a shadchan, you don't necessarily know each other. You're being vulnerable by just showing up to that first date. Because whenever you're meeting somebody, there's the possibility of being judged, there's the possibility of being rejected, it's always there. And you get to know each other. You get to know new information about the other person. You get to know the other person's family a little bit. You get to know their history a little bit. And as you become slowly and slowly more comfortable opening up who you are, the deeper things are going to end up coming out. You're going to end up feeling much more comfortable with vulnerability as you slowly open up. In marriage, hopefully you've gone through some process of that sort. And here's a good way to do it. Take a minute to tell each other about your day. Take a minute to tell each other about the little things that happened to you today. Connect on that level. The more you make an effort to spend mundane time together, not having a business discussion about how the bills are going to get paid, who's going to do carpool for the kids, who's going to cook supper, who's going to pick up this or that. Not talking logistics, not talking the business of running a household, but just spending time sitting together and having mundane time together, downtime together. You'll slowly grow more comfortable with each other. You'll slowly grow more comfortable with that feeling of opening up. There will start being things, hopefully, you know, assuming that both of you have each other's best interests in mind, you'll slowly start to feel that ability to be more and more vulnerable with each other. And there are some things that you may never want to tell each other, which is fine. Being in a marriage doesn't mean that you have to tell everybody everything about each other. It doesn't. But you'll slowly become more comfortable with opening up more and more. You'll slowly become more connected with each other. And as that connection builds, your ability to open up will become greater.
Thank you. Another question. It feels like when I ask for something and then I'll do something back, it feels like a tit for tat game and it doesn't feel comfortable.
Right. It won't. It totally won't. I think really the best answer to that is keep in mind when you're asking for something, you're not just asking for, okay, I gave that to you, so now you give something to me. You're helping your spouse be a better spouse. Their job is to be your spouse. Their job is to be the best spouse that they can. And they can't do that unless they know what you need. So you can look at it from, and it will probably feel like that it's a business transaction. Like, I give you this, you give me two of that. I'll see your, take out the garbage and I'll raise you two fried fishes, you know, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be like that, because you're building a connection and you're building that relationship together. And that means both of you to be able to tell each other what you need and both of you to be able to work to provide that.
This question came in. Sometimes I want that thing and sometimes I don't. How do I let my spouse know that I don't always want it?
That's a tough one. Wow. The silly answer that pops into mind is, like, you know, those old mailboxes used to have those flags. So, you know, put down the flag. I don't know how practical that is, though. I think just make it clear, you know, that it's not so, like, don't do it at the time that he's actually doing it for you, but make it clear this is something that sometimes I'm really in the mood for and sometimes I'm just not, you know, and just managing expectations can go a long way with this. Like, if the person thinks, like, okay, this person loves cream cheese sandwiches because that's what we ate when we were on dates together, and then, like, 10 years down the line, he's making her cream cheese sandwiches breakfast in bed, that's maybe there's another way to do that. So managing expectations can be really helpful there. Just let each other know. I don't always like that.
I guess if when you're vulnerable and you have a real connection, it's easier to say. You have to build up to that, yes, that it becomes easier to say.
Yes.
This Shabbos, I don't need flowers. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's and the flip of it is you can say, next week I want red roses. if you're that comfortable, you could be able to get to that point, and you can say it, not expect it, or be disappointed if he didn't choose the right flowers.
Right, right. And you're right. It is a buildup. It's something that you do have to build up to. But the more you do it, and the more you're met with a positive reaction, the more comfortable you'll feel, because you'll see, okay, my spouse cares. They want to do what's right. And when I tell them what I want, they work towards that. You'll see it, you'll become more comfortable. And again, it's a cycle. It becomes a cycle of giving and accepting and being able to work towards each other's needs and giving each other what you both need.
And asking. In that cycle, there's a lot of asking, and there's nothing wrong with asking. I find that most of my conversations are around, I can't ask him that, or I can't ask her for that. I'm like, yes, you can.
Got it.
We could talk perhaps about a better wording and the tone and the timing, but you can ask for almost everything.
For sure.
Some things are petty, and maybe you really don't need to ask, especially if there's a bigger ask or there's a lot of asks. You have to put it in priority. Or maybe think about why there are so many asks or needs.
Yeah.
The last question, I think.
Okay.
Sometimes it doesn't bother me, and sometimes it does. When we're in the middle of an argument, that thing bothers me more. So how do I tell if it's really a need or if I'm suppressing it? Or.
So that's a great question. That is a very great question. And I think let's put a qualifier on it. What exactly is it that you sometimes find irritating and sometimes don't? Like, you know, you could take that all sorts of ways. Like, let's say for some reason your spouse has, I don't know, a third eye, to be extreme about it. And like, sometimes you're totally okay with it, and sometimes you are totally not. And that's not something that your spouse can really do anything about. Then, you know, it's not something to bring up. Because there's nothing to do about it. There really is literally nothing to do about it. And quite honestly, it can be the same way with behaviors as well. If there's a particular behavior or a particular mannerism that your spouse exhibits that most of the time is really okay, you know, it's a little, you know, you could do without it, but it's fine. And it only flares up, your irritation only flares up when you're arguing about something else. So that's really, that particular irritation is victim of generalized emotions. You know, when we get into these heated moments and we're upset at each other and resentment flares up, that resentment will latch on to any possible target. And the source of that irritation is, it's an open target. It really is. So that's the thing to really be aware of, that you're not really upset at that source of irritation right now. You're upset because they said they were going to be back in a half hour, and turns out they were out for 3 hours schmoozing and just completely didn't realize the time. And you're upset about that. That's what you're upset about. It's not the time to allow yourself to get upset about the third eye. It's just not. So it's like, it's a hard call. It's very nice to talk about. It's a very hard call to actually make and to actually carry, to actually follow through on. But at the end of the day, that's really what it is. You're not upset at that sometimes irritating thing. You're upset about something completely different.
Okay, I said that was the last question, but a really good one just came in. Can I do one more?
Go for it.
Okay. How do you know if what you're asking for too much is too much? If you think it's reasonable, but the other one thinks it's unreasonable, or it's or pushing on too much of your role onto the other one. The example that I gave was household chores, but it really could be in 100 million different other things.
So it's a very personal question, and each couple really has to determine that for themselves. Part of a relationship, as we mentioned before, the definition of a relationship is that I'm going to put into this relationship as much as I can in a way which allows me to feel safe, secure, trusted, cherished, loved, etc. I'm going to put it in a way that allows you to feel that way. And I'm also going to make sure that I am able to feel that way at the same time. So if you have So who's asking? The person who's asking for the...
The asker wants to know if they're being reasonable or not.
So the best way, and this is a great relationship builder also, ask if it's too much. Is this too much for you? Is there another way to do this that would be better for you? Because when we're like, I think it's great that the person asking the question has such self-awareness and such awareness in terms of what the relationship is, that they're like really concerned that they're asking too much. I think that's a beautiful thing, that they have that awareness. The best way to really know for sure is to ask.
I understood the question the other way, that he was letting her, let's just say it was she asking, but maybe that's my gender, so that's why I asked. He was letting her know that's too much to ask for. So she has the awareness because he said so. And she wants to know, is it really too much? Or is it too much now? Like, let's just say, for example, she just had a baby, so she's asking for more than she used to ask for.
Okay. So in situations like that, where the person was asking and the other person refused, or said, I can't give you that, and now the person asking is concerned that it's too much. Okay. So again, it's really the same thing. You got to ask. It's got to be a discussion. It's like, if these are things that you need, like, you know, there has to be that internal process of knowing what your need is and knowing exactly how it plays out and understanding, is this really a need? And then there's got to be a discussion. You got to ask, is this really too much? And if it is too much, can we maybe do something else instead? Or is there any other way to at least partially fill it? Because this is important to me.
So, well, I guess with household chores, there's other solutions. It doesn't have to be me or you.
Right, right. And that can be part of the discussion. That can be part of the discussion. You're getting household help, whatever it is.
This has been great. Okay, this has been recorded. So for those who want to take it apart slowly, because it said a lot of things. And I think someone shared a summary, so that was great. It will share your Shalom Task Force's text hotline, the phone hotline, and the Shalom Task Force website, and our site too, because I think that's really great to collaborate and work together. And I look forward to part two from Shalom Task Force with Shana Freiman in a couple weeks.
Ooh, that's going to be fun.
Yeah, a very different topic, but Shana's always great to talk to. So I look forward to that. And everyone, just look out for our upcoming events. We have several events coming up in the winter. Will be on Zoom and some will be conference call. So thank you all for joining. And if you have any questions, definitely send it to us anonymously, or not. If you want us to answer, it cannot be anonymous. Or if you want to wait till we can put it into one of our JOT posts or into our articles or into an upcoming call, then you can do it anonymously. If you want a quicker answer, you'll have to give us some sort of way to contact you.
Yeah.
So check out our website at adayad.org and Shalom Task Force's website as well.
ShalomTaskForce.org.
And they have lots of resources there too. And thank you all for joining us and good night.
Thank you so much, everyone. It's just a quick thing, if you don't mind. So there is a quick form just to figure out what people might be interested in hearing more about. I just put the link in the chat. If anybody has a chance to fill that out, it's two questions. That would be great and could really help us to program things in a way which would be useful for the community. So if people are able to fill that out, that would be really great. Thank you very much for having me on. I had a lot of fun.
Thank you,
I don't know about everyone else, but I had fun.
So did I.
Thanks so much.
Lots of notes. All right. Thank you.
Have a good night.
Good night.